This is an ABC podcast.
I want to thank everybody for their love and good wish. We hope Tarnika can get the help she needs now. Please help us to get her out of detention and home to Bilola.
There's one Tamil asylum seeker family that's put the government in a very uncomfortable position lately. The Murugappans, known more widely as the Bilawila family, nicknamed after the small Queensland town they lived in for years, have been trying to win the right to stay in Australia for almost a decade now. The family's been on Christmas Island since 2018, and that seemed unlikely to change. Then on Monday of last week, their four-year-old daughter Tarnika became so sick that she was rushed to a Perth hospital with her mother, Priya. After immense public pressure, the rest of the family was allowed to follow. But will it make a difference? I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre, and today on The Signal, why the Bilawila family is proving to be such an exception. Is their case a one-off or a weather vane for a much bigger shift? All right, maybe introduce yourself first, if you don't mind.
So David Spears, host of Insiders.
Hello, welcome back.
Yes, lovely to be back.
So the latest chapter in the story of this family really begins last week. Can you tell us how that part of the story unfolded?
So according to the family, Tarnika, now 4 years old, became unwell back on Monday, the 24th of May. She didn't go to kindergarten that day. She was taken by her mum to see some medical staff at the detention centre. She was running a temperature. She was given some Panadol and some Nurofen. And really that continued over the next few days. The way it works in the Christmas Island Detention Centre is you're not even allowed to have multiple doses of kids' Panadol. You have to keep asking the staff for the next dose. And the mum was clearly, Priya was clearly worried about the ongoing temperature. She didn't improve. They then said on about the 30th of May that it was a urinary tract infection, and more Panadol and Nurofen was prescribed. But, you know, things just didn't improve. So again, the mum kept taking Tarnika back over the following few days. By Friday, the June the 4th, Tarnika was vomiting. Again, more Panadol. You know, this went on for another couple of days. Her temperature went up to about 40 degrees. On the Sunday, she was finally taken to the local hospital, and then the following day, the Monday, this is Monday of last week, she was transferred to Perth Children's Hospital.
More on that emergency and medical evacuation from Christmas Island of the youngest daughter of a Tamil asylum seeker family. Our political reporter, Noor Haider, joins us now from Parliament House. What do we know about Tarnika's condition?
Well, family friends say that Tarnika has been diagnosed with sepsis. That's an infection in the bloodstream. Now, she was medically evacuated off Christmas Island, where she and her family have been detained since 2019. And she was taken to a Perth hospital last night along with her mother. Now,
so Tarnika had what was described as a potential case of sepsis, which is an infection that's become so advanced that it reaches the blood. Although yesterday on a commercial talkback station in Brisbane called 4BC, the Home Affairs Minister Karen Andrews seemed to dispute the seriousness of Tarnika's illness.
What I can say is that a lot of the reporting about the illness that the child is suffering from is inaccurate. So let's just proceed on the basis that the...
That she's not that sick.
I can't answer anything that would give details of this child's medical condition other than to say a lot of the reporting has been inaccurate.
And later that day, senior Labor frontbencher Penny Wong came out criticising those remarks.
I found it troubling that you saw a federal minister, by her comments, suggesting that the illness of a child was less serious than had been reported. I don't think that's helpful to this situation and does say something.
In any case, Tarnika was sick enough that officials decided to bring her to Perth, along with her mum, Priya, but not the rest of the family.
Her sister and father remained at Christmas Island, so the family was separated at that point, and we know that caused further anguish for young Tarnika as well.
Yeah, and there was quite a bit of public backlash to this. What form did that take? What kind of backlash did we see?
Yeah, we saw public vigils take place outside the Perth Children's Hospital, but elsewhere in the country as well.
How I
We're a little rural town in Central Australia that wants to bring Nadez, Priya, Kopaker and Tarnica home to Billa Wheeler to live with us. So now our voices have been heard around the world. Our government has pretended they can't hear us, but they can't pretend anymore.
You know, a lot of public backlash generally about this, as well as political pressure from Labor, which has long been arguing this family should be returned to Billa Wheeler, the community in Queensland where they used to live before being taken into detention, but also from within the government's ranks as well, some Liberals and even a couple of Nationals publicly saying that they felt enough was enough, that it was time this family was removed from Christmas Island and settled in Australia.
Barnaby, we need to show some sympathy here and reunite this family.
Tarnica and Kopaker were born in Australia, in Australia. Now, maybe if their names were Jane and Sally and they were playing the local netball side, we'd think twice about sending them back to another country which they're not from. I mean, send them to Sri Lanka, why not send them to Southern Sudan? Send them to Rwanda? Send them to Belarus, because they're also countries they're never born in.
How unusual is that public political split within the coalition, particularly when it comes to refugee policy?
Look, we haven't seen much division in the Liberal Party on this issue for some years. I recall back in the Howard government days, there were quite often Liberal moderates who did speak up over things like children in detention, offshore processing. But then you had the Labor years, Rudd and Gillard, and we saw the Rudd government dismantle the Pacific Solution, it was as known, the asylum seeker policy, and a lot of votes came, a lot of people, more than 1,000, died at sea. And that was really a turning point for many in the politics of this, and even those moderates in the Liberal Party from that point on have been pretty solidly in support of the tough line that we've seen the coalition revert to, whether that's offshore processing, boat turnbacks, temporary protection visas, and this hard line that if you are not found to be a refugee, you cannot stay in Australia. And this family has been found repeatedly by courts and tribunals not to be in need of protection, not to be refugees.
Okay, so it's pretty weird by the sounds of things to see such a split. And we'll come back to maybe why we are seeing that. But let's talk now about the Minister Alex Hawke's decision to intervene. What were the powers he used to do that, and what was his rationale?
The Immigration Minister has pretty wide discretion when it comes to making a ministerial intervention and could do a lot, basically. He could give them a permanent visa and let them return to Billa Wheeler. He's chosen not to do that. He argues that no, and this has been the Morrison government and before it, the Turnbull and the Abbott government's positions, that nobody who's come by boat to Australia will be allowed to permanently settle here. They believe that is a strong message of deterrence to people, smugglers and would-be asylum seekers, not to bother trying. So they're holding that firm line. What he has done is use his ministerial discretion to simply remove them from Christmas Island and let them live in Perth in what's known as community detention. So they're allocated some housing. Kids can go to school in Perth, certainly once Tarnica's out of hospital. The minister can decide whether the parents are allowed work rights and those sort of things, but they're not alone in this situation in being in what's called community detention, life that's something like normal, but certainly not what you and I would describe as normal.
No. And how unusual is it for the minister to make this kind of intervention? Does this happen all the time and we just don't hear about it, or is it a real one-off?
Look, it does happen fairly regularly in different cases, and particularly I'm thinking of medical evacuations over the years from Nauru and Manus Island, the two offshore detention centres. Very quietly, the government transferred hundreds, more than 1,000 people on medical transfers using this ministerial discretion. At times it was because the courts were threatening to embarrass the government, so they did it quietly. But this is unusual because of the high profile around this particular family and the public and political pressure that the government's been under. The fact that you had its own backbenchers demanding a solution here really put a lot of heat on both the Immigration Minister, Alex Hawke, and the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison. So it's hard to believe they would have done any of this were there not that sort of political pressure.
Let's take a step back for a moment and talk about the history of this family's claim. Because Priya and Nadez Maragapan have been trying to stay in Australia for the better part of a decade now. There have been multiple appeals. What's the substance of their claim?
Well, they claim to face persecution back in Sri Lanka because the father, Nadez, is, well, he says, alleged to have been part of the Tamil Tigers, the Liberation Tigers of Tamil Eelam. Now, there was a civil war in Sri Lanka, a very bloody civil war in Sri Lanka that's come to an end some years ago, but there is still this fear of persecution for those linked to the Tamil Tigers. Now, the argument here is that the father is unfairly linked, but linked nonetheless and would face persecution were they to be returned. Worth noting that hundreds, more than 1,000 Sri Lankans have returned to Sri Lanka from Australia after coming here by boat. This family has not been found to be refugees, as I say, by courts and tribunals. So the argument is they can safely return. There is some dispute, though. Various international bodies point out there is ongoing persecution of Tamils in Sri Lanka, that this is still not a safe place for people to return. So that is contested, but the Australian government's view and the court's view here is certainly that they are not deserving of protection.
Okay, so what avenues does the family have left now?
Well, they still have, it's a bit complicated in terms of the avenues that they're still pursuing. There are a series of court orders which right now have stopped the government from deporting them, forcing them back to Sri Lanka. And there's a particular case around young Tanaka and whether she has the right to apply for a protection visa, whether she's been denied procedural fairness. If the court determines she is allowed to apply for a protection visa, that is a path that could see the whole family allowed to stay. Separately, you've also got the Immigration Minister, Alex Hawke, required to consider, at least, the court's told him to consider, whether he should lift the bar and allow them to apply for another visa in Australia. So that's something he's still considering. He's got to work his way through a lot of court papers on that. And we're told the decision's still some weeks away. So there's a couple of potential avenues that could see them allowed to stay in Australia.
Right. And what's the best case scenario for them, realistically?
Look, best case scenario would be a determination that they're refugees. Now, that may be because there's a decision by the government that things have changed in Sri Lanka, that maybe COVID's more of a problem, that health reasons for the kids, whatever it is, on compassionate grounds, they could be allowed to stay. But it's worth noting that even if they are, they would go on to temporary visas, not a permanent resettlement, because anyone who came by boat, you know, nearly a decade ago in 2012, 2013, they're on temporary protection visas. There's more than 18,000 of them now, in fact. And so they would join this cohort, sometimes called the legacy caseload. But you could perhaps also call them the forgotten caseload of people who just do not have permanency in Australia.
Yeah, these are the famous TPVs that we sometimes hear referred to. How temporary is temporary?
So there's two different visas for refugees that came by boat. One's the temporary protection visa. It only runs for 3 years and then you can reapply. You can work, you can send your kids to school, you can get Medicare benefits and so on, but you can't do things like a family reunion, bring your parents to Australia. You can't access HECS if you want to go to university. You have to pay the international student fee. So there are some restrictions on these temporary protection visa holders, but mainly it's that uncertainty of having to reapply every 3 years and not being able to essentially call Australia your permanent home. The second visa is a similar one. It's called the Safe Haven Enterprise Visa. It runs a little longer, 5 years. You have to spend most of that time, though, in a regional area, which obviously this family would be doing in Bilawila. But again, same sort of thing. You have to keep reapplying. There's just no certainty about how permanent your stay in Australia is.
Okay, so there are 18,000 refugees on TPVs currently. This case has proved to be exceptional in a few key ways, though, you know, causing a public political split in the coalition, being a not totally unique but unusual case for intervention on the part of the Immigration Minister, Alex Hawke. Why would it not be another exception in the sense that, you know, maybe they just go, oh, have a permanent protection visa?
I think it would be a very difficult argument for, well, really either side of politics to say that a family who's not been found to be deserving of refugee status should get a permanent visa when Thousands and thousands of those who have been found to be genuine refugees are only given temporary visas. I think that would be a very hard argument to mount. So that then raises the point as to, you know, do we shift all of those 18,000 or so on temporary refugee visas into some permanent visa situation? Now, Labor got rid of temporary protection visas when they were last in power. Kevin Rudd did that. Tony Abbott brought them back. And Labor, since then, has been arguing they should still be scrapped. After the last election, though, Labor decided to review its position on this. It does seem likely, though, they'll still go to the next election, promising to abolish these temporary visas once again and move all of those on these TPVs onto a permanent refugee standing.
And we know that because Anthony Albanese, the Labor leader, has said as much at the Labor conference, is that right?
Yeah, the Labor conference passed unanimously a platform position which said Labor would abolish TPVs and return to permanent refugee visas. Anthony Albanese's been a bit careful in his language. He hasn't announced this as a policy yet, but it seems very clear, and certainly based on my conversations, this is where they're heading. It's a political risk, though, it's worth noting, for Labor. It does give an opening for the coalition to, again, wedge Labor on this issue of border protection. And we know Scott Morrison, he's the guy who has a trophy in his office about stopping the boats, would be absolutely geared up to, again, accuse Labor of wanting to weaken our border protection.
All right, well, it seems like they're on a collision course then. If you've got the coalition really not looking like they're going to budge and Labor looking all but certain to take the scrapping of TPVs to the next election, should we be expecting it to be a important policy battleground?
It's a policy battleground that Labor has lost time and again. Whether it was Scott Morrison, before him Malcolm Turnbull, before him Tony Abbott, they've belted Labor over this issue of border protection and asylum seekers for years, election after election. Now, the unknown is whether the public sympathy around the plight of this particular family that's just been removed from Christmas Island, whether that public sympathy extends now into a broader shift on refugees and asylum seekers more generally, and a view that these temporary protection arrangements are no good, that we should give refugees after nearly a decade in Australia permanency. Now, as I say, that's really unclear whether there has been that widespread shift. The Morrison government clearly does not think that's happened. Yes, they might have been embarrassed, they might have looked heartless in relation to this particular family, but they think they're still on very solid ground when it comes to the broader policy position on border protection.
Yeah, I mean, you've been watching this debate play out for quite a while, David, yeah. And you know, you've watched the needle of public sentiment as it's moved on this. Does this time strike you as any different from the others?
Look, no, in one sense. Whenever we see a face and an identity, and particularly young, vulnerable kids attached to an issue around the way we treat asylum seekers, it's not unusual that you see this emotional outpouring, this public outrage, this anger, and in many ways guilt, I think, that Australia is doing this.
A story that touches, or should touch, all Australians, I think. I think it's crazy. The years have gone by, but it's been 2 years since these guys have been, this family has been stuck in detention.
We are here. We are going to support you. Got strength and look after two kids.
I think the fact that a petition got over 500,000 signatures in the course of a week, the fact that all across the country there have been demonstrations, vigils, people writing endless notes to the family. At the Perth Hospital, apparently, they were just inundated with flowers and presents for Tanika's fourth birthday.
We saw that when it was kids in detention during the Howard years as well. But once that is dealt with in a way by the government, and they will be able to argue they've at least got them out of Christmas Island and into the community, I think a lot of that public attention, the caravan moves on, and the coalition certainly have been very effective at running the scare about the return of boats, of deaths at sea, of an influx of asylum seekers. So we know that any opening they'll be able to weaponise. So I wouldn't for a moment think that just because there's been this pressure on the government over this particular family, that suddenly means that they're going to have to give ground more broadly in terms of their approach to this issue.
That's the signal for today. If you do want to get in touch with any story ideas, questions, feedback, our email's thesignal@abc.net.au. And we'll be back tomorrow. Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.